This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Jim Pooley, Pooleyopoulos from Bentley University. Pooley, are you ready to talk about persuasion and sales processes?
One of my favorite topics in the world, Jason.
Here we go. We'll try to contain this into a conversation. Luckily, like I joked from time to time, there's no podcast police, so who knows how long this part's going to turn out to be. For people who are tuning in now, you can check out the show notes. All this information will be in there. Pooley is the founder and director of the professional sales program at Bentley University. He was in sales. As he says, he's a recovering engineer who then went into sales because that was a quicker transition than getting into education. Yet he ended up in education anyway. He's been doing this for a long time. He does consulting. He does training, coaching, leadership development. He wrote a book about being a well-being. And let's dive into processes, sales processes. So let's start the opposite of where we did last time. What is it that buyers want from a salesperson?
It's a great question, right? And it's the kind of question that people wonder about a lot. I've often thought that what a buyer wants from a salesperson is what I call a diamond-shaped conversation. If you think about a diamond, right, the top tip of the diamond, think of that as your initial rapport building, relationship building, establishing your credibility, right? So that's the beginning of a great sales conversation. Not talking about anything specific about the customer's problem or thing that you're trying to solve. Just get to know me, right? And then using that as an opportunity to begin asking questions, open-ended discovery questions, right? We call them discovery questions. But here's where it becomes tricky. With that top half of the diamond, I feel like that rapport building and then the open-ended questions should be a very divergent process. In other words, you should be asking a lot of questions so the buyer feels like you're genuinely interested in what they have to say and what they're currently going through. You got to bite your tongue till it bleeds and avoid talking about what you do and how you can help the buyer. Even if the buyer indicates they have a problem you can solve, just write that down, a little piece of paper, note it, and keep asking more open-ended questions. Try to uncover as much as possible before the bottom half of the diamond, which is, oh, you've told me these are all the things you're trying to do. Let me tell you a little bit about how we do that, and it might be able to solve your problems, and let me tell you why we're a little different than everyone else and how we do that, and let me share some proof with you, if you will, right? So that means to me that when you are selling and you begin to close too quickly, that diamond is a little too small. You're making a small diamond. The more you diverge that conversation, the longer you can stay in discovery, the bigger the diamond, which means the bigger the value for the buyer. So to put it in the typical analogy that we all use about sellers as doctors, right? As physicians, if I walk into my physician's office and I hold up my arm and say, "Doc, I've got this rash on my hand. I'm sure it's poison ivy. Can you just give me some medication for it? Because it itches and it bothers me. Just give me the medication." If my doctor literally handed me a tube of medicine and said, "There you go, take care," I would actually be a little pissed off, right? Because what do I want in that situation is for them to say, "Hold on now, Pooley, that might be poison ivy, but it could be a lot of other things. When did it start? What were you doing? Has it gotten worse or better? When does it itch? Is it worse in the morning or at night? Anyone else in your family have this? Have you eaten something odd lately? Have you changed your medication?" Like a million different questions, right? That's discovery. And at the end of that, I want the physician to look at me and say, "You thought you had poison ivy, but it turns out you have this. And that treatment for poison ivy would have made it worse. Good thing we had this conversation to talk about all the different elements of this." Buyers want genuine interest from the seller as people, right? I think the best mindset that a seller can adopt in a conversation that makes a buyer feel like they want to do business with you is not, "How do I make this deal close?" Because that's 99% of sellers I work with initially think, "How do I get this deal to close? How do I get this deal to close?" The mindset they really need to adopt is, "How do I help this person on the other side of the table or the other side of the Zoom or the other side of the phone? How do I help them personally or professionally? What am I going to do to help them personally or professionally?" If they take that mindset, they'll have great sales conversations and the buyer will feel like they're cared about. And that's what buyers want. They want to feel like they're cared about. And it can't be disingenuous, because that's easy to note too.
And that's where starting with the authenticity piece is important, right? At least to me, and I know it is to you as well, is right. That if you're not sincere and you don't genuinely care, like you said several times in the first part of the conversation, yep. genuinely curious,
genuinely.
Not yep. curious to check a box, not curious to say that I did it, not curious because I know that if I do that, I can trick them into liking me, like genuinely curious first.
Right. People say, how do I do this? Like, how do I do this? With a buyer, with a prospect, if they know and I know that we're there to close business, I say, you do this by doing it all the time. When you run into someone waiting in line someplace, have a genuine, interested conversation with them. When you're at a cocktail party or a barbecue or at an event with family or friends, just be genuinely interested in the other person that you're talking to. Don't be looking at your watch. Don't be looking over there to see, oh, I want to go talk to that person. Be in the moment with every conversation you have outside of your sales conversations, and then take that mindset into the sales conversation. So you can practice this all the time. I think I do. It's just the thing that I have always done, but it's a thing you can begin doing, like right now, like today, whoever's listening to the podcast, next person you come across, next random stranger, have a genuinely interested conversation in them.
And you will usually blow people's minds because they're wondering if there's a catch or if you're up to something. And if you don't have any intention to be up to something, then it's amazing because people will appreciate it. It's funny because it reminds me of a guest that I had on my podcast years ago. And I forget his last name. I'll put it in the show notes. The title of the episode and his big thing from an insurance broker, so he sells insurance, is don't be that weird guy at the barbecue, right? Who's like just talking to people to then right. find out so that he can sell them and walking yes. around work in the right. group. Actually just build relationships and be curious and yes. then see yes. where it goes, even without any attention.
Important. It's like when you get a LinkedIn request from someone you've never heard of, right? And you're like, oh, they know a lot of the same people I do. I will accept the request. And then 30 seconds later, it's, hey, we work with businesses just like yours, the X, Y, and Z. It's like,
yeah,
click, blocked, gone, done.
Yeah. And the same reason I don't want to answer cold calls and I don't want to answer my door on a cold yeah. door knocking adventure of people there. It's the same thing. People just shift that to a different medium right. and then they're surprised why right. it doesn't work. Yeah. So one thing, you're talking about sales process, right? So we're talking yeah. about persuasion and moving people forward. In your example, which I think is great because I use medical doctor yeah. examples all the time as a correlation. What if you didn't have a rash and you went hiking and then now you have a rash and you're pretty sure it's poison oak, poison ivy, and there's times where you're like, this is what I've got. It's really clear. And this is where it came from. And then if you've ever gone to a doctor who's then asking tons of questions to try to find something else, it's almost not like, it's not like they're doing their due diligence. It's almost like they're trying to find something else that may or may not be there versus I am that person who in this moment, I literally, like this happened to me last week. I have a sinus infection. I get these all the time. Right. Here is what I need. We don't need to talk about anything else. This yeah. is it. Where does that fit in with a sales process?
I think there's certainly space for a buyer who has had experience with a specific kind of problem and knows that they need a specific solution to it. I know I got to buy dog food for my dogs every month. I know I've got to get an oil change every month for my car. I don't need my mechanic to do a 20-point safety inspection for me every time. But you know what? Once in a while, when they do, when the car's up in the lift and he calls me and says, you've got a broken gizmo, whatever, gadget gizmo, we can fix it today. If not, the wheel could come off on the highway. I want to hear that, right? I want to hear that. He's selling me something that because he's genuinely interested in my safety. So yes, there are times when you can pick up the phone and say, I need a refill of this prescription, or I need a refill of this thing, or I know exactly what I want. In that case, I'm buying. I'm not shopping.
Yeah.
But there's still room there for someone to ask you a question and make you go, huh, I never thought of it that way. I can give you a quick example. And it just has to do with the electronics. So a few years ago, I was having a big Super Bowl party. And the day before the party, Saturday, I realized my 17-year-old Bose stereo system was not working. And I had the big home theater, right? And I'm like, everyone's coming over. And it's just going to be the little dinky speakers on the TV. And you can't have that. So I thought, in a moment, I don't have the wherewithal to fix this. It's an old system. I can't replace any parts of it. So I ran up to an electronics store and I said, where are your sound bars? I just wanted the sound bar to put in front of the TV and hook it up. So they handed me one that was on sale. And I was walking towards the front of the store and someone else said, anything else I can help you with today, sir? And I'm like, no, I think I'm all set. And he goes, oh, what are you doing? Are you buying that for yourself? We got to talking and he said, wait, so your stereo system at home broke and you're buying a sound bar to replace it? I said, yeah. He said, are your speakers hardwired into the walls? I said, yeah, I actually wired them myself when we built that room. So everything's hooked up. I said, yeah. He says, and you're buying a sound bar and you're going to have those speakers on the wall. What are you going to do with those? I said, I'm going to leave them there because Mrs. Pooley doesn't know that by putting the sound bar in, we don't need them. And I don't feel like patching the walls or painting them. And he says, if you bought this receiver and that bass module, you could continue using those speakers, which are better than the sound bar you're going to buy. Just a thought. And he walked away. And I was like, oh, I knew exactly what I wanted, Jason. I wanted that sound bar because I wanted it to be done quick. He gave me a thing to think about, and I did it just as quick, but the sound that I ended up buying was phenomenal. And I spent more for a better experience. So, yeah, sometimes we know what we want, but that's not always what we need. And in that case, I'm glad he stopped me because I would have had a sound bar and I would have had dead speakers on my wall. So I think there's space for it, but I think you have to trust the person you're speaking with to let them do a little due diligence. But again, it has to be genuine. I didn't think he was trying to sell me anything. I had this thing in my cart. I was ready to go. He was just an audiophile that worked in the store. And we had a good conversation about sound, audio, right? And from that, it was my decision. It wasn't, oh, let me try to upsell you. I didn't get that sense at all.
Well, and that's where there's that balance of the art and the science of sales. You can do all these things over here, and then there's this part over here. So when you're looking at that, and I love the imagery of the diamond, especially the more you spend expanding that diamond, especially with discovery questions, not with slide decks and pitch decks people do that's on the bottom half, but like just imagining this top half, and as you ask questions and discover and go deeper, it expands. And then the other part is narrowing down to a tip. It's not a triangle that just is painful. It's going to narrow down, but obviously the bigger, the more value. Because, and again, this kind of goes back to what I've heard before, like you can make a lot of money by solving a lot of little problems or some big problems, right? Especially in sales and business. Right. So how do you teach that to the salespeople? How do you give them that and build that process with them so that they can go out there in the world and use that at a company with whatever the company's framework is?
So part of it is two prongs to this, right? One is, how do you teach sellers to do this? The way to teach sellers to do it is to really work with them on that notion that there's always another question to ask, right? Hmm. And I think they also have to think about it in terms of, it's not just about asking the question and getting the answer. It's about taking that answer and going 3, 4, 5 levels deeper. So I give you an answer to a question, then my response as a seller should be, can you tell me a little more about that? What do you mean? I just told you the answer. Give me an example when that happens, or describe for me a time when that happened and the effect on your team. Let's say I'm selling some kind of enterprise software, right? Whatever their answer to my question is, I should always be ready to ask some what I call implication questions, like, why is this important? When does it happen? What happens if it doesn't get fixed? And then other questions in terms of measuring the size of the problem. How often does that happen? How much time do you waste when you're chasing that sort of thing down? What kind of things would your team be working on if you weren't dealing with this, you know, recurring problem? And what I'm trying to get to there is more of an emotional response, because prospects will tell you about deadlines that they're under, and they will tell you about problems that are recurring, and they'll tell you about opportunities that their organization is chasing after. But we always have to translate that and dig enough dig deep enough so that those deadlines, we understand what is the fear that this person has associated with that deadline. If I don't meet this deadline, I'm going to get canned. If I don't meet that deadline, I'm going to lose a bonus. If I don't meet that deadline, I might get demoted. I might get my team taken away. What's the fear, right? Problems are associated with a pain that recurs, right? I have this problem, and because of this, I'm spending every weekend at work trying to solve this problem. I'm being called in at all hours of the night because I have to fix this problem. That pain can become emotional pain. I'm missing time out with my family. I'm not getting enough sleep. I'm not taking care of myself, you know, my health. And then the opportunity piece should be translated into some sense of a gain that someone might feel. So if I can solve this problem, not only does the company gain some revenue, but man, me personally, I'll be in great position to be promoted to vice president. That's the gain that I want. I try to get my sales clients to understand it is that divergent questioning. You should go as deep as you can personally and professionally. You should help identify problems the prospect doesn't know they have that your products and services can solve. And then ultimately, it's a question of almost gamifying that discovery, right? So that top half of the diamond, if I'm a sales manager and I'm listening to my sellers on calls, I've got a little stopwatch running and I'm thinking, how long did they go into this call before they started pitching our products and services? Because that's the point where they ran out of questions. If they go 10 minutes into the call and they've got a 30 or 40 minute call, and the rest of that call is just me as a seller telling a prospect everything about my product I can think of, then I will take that seller aside as a manager and say, okay, you made it 10 minutes out of a 40 minute call. Next call, can we get to 15 or 20 minutes of discovery? Give me 15, 20 minutes of solid discovery. See how that feels. See what things you learn that you didn't learn in that other call. And then eventually I want them to go like 75, 80% of the way through in discovery. That's where the big part of the diamond is. And so if you're a sales leader, you can gamify this by listening how long they stay in discovery. And as a sales manager or sales leader, I think it's really important to adopt a mindset change as well. Stop asking your sellers, how do we get this deal to close? Everyone knows that's why we're here, right? Your salesperson knows it. You know it. Your VP of sales, your CRO, everyone knows we're having a conversation with people we don't know to close deals. We get it. That's the caveat. But every golfer knows they're trying to get the hole in the ball. Everyone knows that. You don't have to keep telling me that. What you really need to do is ask your seller, what are you doing to help this prospect? Literally ask them that. What are you doing to help this person personally and professionally? That's a weird question for a sales manager to ask a seller. But if you ask it often enough, it will begin to stick and it will completely change the nature of the conversations they have. And it's really up to sales leaders to adopt that. Because if I'm a seller and my sales manager is always asking me, how are you going to close this deal? That's all I'm going to think about when I'm talking to the prospect. And I will be desperate and I will be fearful. And I won't have good discovery conversations. But if he asks me, how are you helping this person? What do they care about? What's most important to them? I'm going to have a different kind of conversation. So,
and that's a huge thing that obviously anybody who knows me knows that's what I believe in as well, is that focus on the discovery questions and not talking about yourself for as long as possible. The challenge then becomes for sales leaders in how do you manage that? How do you actually do that from a coaching and a leadership standpoint, which obviously is very doable, but it's a big shift from, hey, how many calls did you make today? How many emails did you make? How many demos have you done? Yes. Like, where's your pipeline? When are these going to close? Like you said, and I love the golf reference because it's like, of course, we know the goal is to get it into the hole, especially in this many shots based on the hole that we're on. Right. So we know that, but all that matters right now is how do I get it from here to closer? And then once that happens, because that will be a variable because it won't go perfectly where I want.
Exactly.
How do I get it closer with adjustments? And I love that. And I've never thought about that, but with sales, it's true. I know where the ultimate destination is. That's great. I got that. But we need to get closer. And then how do we get closer? And then how do we get closer so that it just falls in, right? Like it just happens. It's done.
You know, great golfers have a great swing. They have great mechanics. They've worked on that part of it. But great salespeople have great ability to have a conversation, period. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's their golf game, right? And If you focus on that, on the process of the sales conversation, the outcomes will come. If they don't, and you believe that you've done a great job of discovery, you've done everything you can, you've been genuinely empathetic, guess what? Maybe this person just doesn't need what you're selling, right? Mm-hmm. And that's another problem, which is sometimes we refuse to admit that someone might not want to buy what we're selling. And that's a whole other conversation about how do you qualify a prospect and qualify them out quickly. But there are times when what we sell isn't appropriate for who's buying. So that's okay, folks, right? It's okay. Move on to another one that is a better fit.
Yeah. So sales process and the diamond, in your experience, what causes buyers to not buy from a salesperson?
A few things. So there's always the case of, look, I think we can do this ourselves. So that, especially in enterprise sales, right? Sometimes, and we can create something like this internally ourselves, right? So there's a little bit of ego involved, or do nothing, right? I don't think the problem is as big as you say it is, right? As a prospect, I'm saying, I don't think the seller's telling me, I don't believe them, right? It's not as big as that. So part of it is this idea that I either do it myself or do nothing, which really comes from a seller's inability to answer three questions. Why should they make a difference, right? What could be better if they went down a different path by buying a product or service? Why should they do it now? Like, how much worse does this situation get if you wait? And then ultimately, why should you buy from me, from my company? And think about how a lot of traditional sellers go about this. Let me tell you why you should buy from me. That's the first thing they tell people. They understand, why should you buy anything? And so I think a lot of times the reason buyers don't buy is because they haven't been convinced that you know anything about their business and you've been listening to them. You just go in with a standard kind of conversation. It's the golf game, right? It's the playing virtual golf versus the actual thing. There's variations in a lot of the real world, right? So I think it's because they don't feel like they've been heard and they don't feel like they've been convinced the problem is big enough. And part of it is sellers tend to try to push their point of view on someone without it coming from the prospect. If you do a better job of asking questions and lead your prospect to this decision of what they should do next, if a prospect is telling you what they need to solve the problem and it sounds a lot like what you're selling, you've done a great job, because prospects rarely disagree with their own conclusions. If the prospect has told you a problem and you're telling them how to solve it, there's still a lack of trust there. They don't really know if that's true or not. If they're telling you what they think they need as a solution, and then you say, let me tell you a little bit about how we do that, that's great. But if you're telling them what their problem is and how to solve it with what you sell, there's always going to be that little nagging part of the back of the prospect's mind saying, well, he's just saying this because he wants to close a deal. He doesn't really care about me.
Makes sense. And see that all the time. So many times when it's done correctly, and I will use that word, they're closing themselves on why it's important. But you have to be that guide. I see so many people then go, okay, well, if they just have to close themselves, I just do this thing and then hopefully they'll ask me for it. You don't want to be an order taker. You have to be a guide.
Right.
But if you tell them what they're like, anybody, right? Tell your teenager what they should do and see how that works, right? Versus let them walk them through a path of discovering or realize. Yes. Like you said, coaching, executive coaching, any kind of coaching is like sales. It's the same process of like, I had a problem. I wasn't sure what to do about it. Oh, here's the solution.
Right.
And then in sales, it's, I have the solution, right?
You can either be a coach or a consultant, right? So if you're a consultant, people come to you because they think you have the answer to their problem. They want to know exactly what to do. That's okay if you're an expert in an area and you're working as a consultant. That's fine. I work as a consultant, right? And it's great. But I'm not an expert in every area. So when I was coaching executives and business owners, I didn't know much about the businesses, the industries they were in. I didn't have to. I learned about it through them. I just had to ask great questions. And by asking great questions that were two-sided, in other words, I was looking for information, but I was also getting my potential executive coaching client to think about things a little differently. They were realizing things they didn't realize until I had asked those questions of them. And then suddenly they were coming to their own conclusions about how to move forward. Just like the teenager, right? You can't do this. You need to clean your room. You need to get to bed by a certain time. Those are very dictatorial. That's like a seller telling a prospect, I'm here to close business. But if you ask the right kinds of questions, those of us that have had kids, at some point they're like, yeah, I guess if I did that, then it would be better. You know what I mean? Like they come to their own conclusion. And I think that's something that sellers need to learn over time. But I also feel sometimes sellers find themselves in an environment where that is not acceptable. And so sometimes when I see a seller in an environment, years ago, I worked with some consulting client many years ago that I just remember walking in to do some sales training and just getting the sense that these were unhappy people and they were beaten like rented mules, right? That's what I just got the sense that all the stuff I talked to them about, diamond-shaped conversations and open-ended conversation questions and genuinely care about your prospect, they all bought it. They loved it. But I heard through the grapevine, that ain't the way we're told to sell, and I'm not sure anything's going to change here. So sometimes you have to ask yourself, are you in the right environment too?
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be a good fit from the top down. So I'm super excited about the future of sales, which is going to be the next part of our conversation. Yeah. I love the stuff that you're talking about here, that diamond analogy. For anyone who's listening and watching this, make sure if you didn't get all that, go back through and listen to that part, because that's amazing. And what I love about it, and I love on some of these conversations that I've had with people like yourself, Pooley, is this fundamental foundational sales principles, not here's spin or here's challenger or here's my acronym for how to sell. That's like tactical stuff in the toolbox, but what's the foundational stuff? And so that's why I love that diamond, because you can apply anything else to that. It's like, what kind of question should I ask? That's a part on top. But once you understand that framework and the whole point of it all, then everything else is, in my opinion, easy. And so I absolutely love that. And I appreciate you sharing that on here and putting that out there and teaching people like this fundamental that then layer on the other parts to it, the things that they need in those moments. As we wrap this up, for people who want to connect with you, I know the big thing is Pooley.com and Jim Pooley, Pooleyopoulos on LinkedIn. Thanks for being here. If it is you who got something from this, remember, and I say this from time to time, is you're here for a reason. If you found this episode and you listened through to something in here that you are supposed to take away. So hopefully you took something, you got some value from it, you put something in place. Don't make this just a nice, fun episode. Of course, listen to it, like it, share it, review it, all the good stuff. But don't just let this be, oh, that was a nice 30-minute conversation. That's great. Let me go on with my day. Do something from this. Use this as something valuable to help you close more deals, make more money. And ultimately, which my goal is, as I know Pooley's as well, shift the world from unprofessional, dirty word, who knows what they're doing, and this doesn't work, to something that people are actually craving to get help from, like the stuff that Pooley was talking about. And as always, thank you for tuning in and for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.